Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a captivating podcast series that brings together some of the brightest minds in the agriculture industry. Straight from the field to your living room, we explore the challenges, innovation, and triumphs in modern-day farming and provide insight for consumers who are curious about where their food comes from. Welcome to this week's Voices of the Valley. I'm your host, Corey Lundy. In this week's podcast, we join Western Growers social media manager Julia Nellis and special guest Celeste Alonzo, a third-generation grower at Junior Enterprises in the Coachella Valley, as they uncover some myths and misconceptions about the agriculture industry. When most of us do our grocery shopping each week, we're usually focused on one thing, making sure we don't forget any of the items we've written down on our grocery list. But there are some of us who have a deeper perspective on farming and our food and look beyond the well-stocked produce lined up on the shelves. I think it's safe to assume that most of us aren't intimately familiar with the day-to-day intricacies of operating a farm. We often see news headlines or stories shared on social media, but without the full story or proper context, they can easily turn into misunderstandings that are eventually mistaken for facts. We're going to dispel some of those food and farm myths this week. We'll be talking about farm worker safety standards and worker protection, concerns about automation and technology replacing human jobs, common misconceptions about organic versus conventional produce, and much more. By the end of this podcast, we hope you'll have a better understanding of the real story behind these common myths and have a newfound appreciation for agriculture and the dedicated individuals who grow our food.
Hi, I'm Julia. Thank you for joining us for this portion of Voices of the Valley. I'm joined here by Celeste. Celeste, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, my name is Celeste Alonzo. I work my family farm, Junior Enterprises, in Coachella, California. I am the COO of the operation, and I currently work alongside my younger brother and my dad.
Myth number one, that working conditions in the field are unsafe and that workers are treated poorly. How would you address this myth?
You know, it really upsets me when people say that, because one thing my dad has instilled in my brothers and I is respecting your workforce, because he's like, if you respect them, you're pretty much giving them, they're in charge of harvesting your crop. So if you treat them right, they will take care of you. And that's something that he's instilled in us. And well, we have our farm workers that do our year round ground prep work, and we have safety trainings every month. We take care of them as their family. We treat our 15 people like family. And then we have our harvest workers. And I know that's where a lot of the issues stem from, is harvest. People just think farm workers and harvest. And I think one of the biggest things we need to separate is that growers hire farm labor contractors. And I know farmers pretty much have to be on top of the farm labor contractors, but at the end of the day, when it comes to safety, it's on the farm labor contractors. And we make an effort to go out to the fields. Well, we do during harvest. We go out and make sure that everything's right. We don't stay the whole time, but we make sure, for example, like our corn harvest, it's at night. Every worker needs to have a reflective jacket. You're at night, you don't want to get run over or hit by a tractor or anything like that. But in the end of the day, we put a lot of the trust in farm labor contractor. And we've had to change farm labor contractors because we've seen some that don't have the safety standards that we wish they would have. So we have to switch. And for example, for Thanksgiving, the California Farm Worker Foundation gave us food to give to all our harvest workers. And on top of that, my dad has always given our harvest workers $20 gift cards for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And for me, I think that's something beautiful, because not only do they see that we care, but it's something that we could do for them and their families, especially during the holidays. So for harvest workers, there's a lot of pre-inspections that go into place as far as, and then as well as like during harvest inspections, that we need to have the basics, obviously shade, water, and porta potties. And depending on the size of the crew, that depends on the amount of shades we take out, porta potties, and things like that. Breaks are also very important. That's one thing that we are sticklers with the FLCs. They need to have their breaks. Because that is one thing we've had issues in the past, where some workers don't want to take a break, and then it comes back and backfires on us because we're not giving them the appropriate time off or break time. So we're always super sure that they're getting their break times and their lunch break as well, and they're all taking them. That's part of it. So
Will you touch on that a bit more, how you guys have employees who have been with the company for so long, and just touch on that relationship? And there's a misconception that field workers are not treated right compared to you guys having workers that have been here for so long.
Yeah, my dad came to the desert like in the 1980s, and he started his own business in 2008, and he still had connections from when he first started, and his best friends, he was 28 when he got here, and he's had people working with him, Prospero being one of them, who's been by his side, his right-hand man, since he started. And I don't think the company would be where we at if we didn't have these loyal employees who help us so much. Like I said, they're family to us. So many of them, I think there's three of them that have known me since we were babies, and to be able to work alongside them now, and my brothers work with them, like, it's a blessing to me. It's a blessing because we're family.
Myth number two, that adding machines into the field leaves farm laborers out of work.
As far as machinery in the fields, here in the desert, we haven't really fully grasped onto that yet, just because we don't have that much of a labor issue being so close to the border. But I could see why so many companies in Salinas and Northern California are using them, just because of the shortage or also the cost of getting labor out there. I know H-2A has becoming more difficult, but as far here in the desert, we haven't incorporated too much, but it's getting to the point where we have to, just because, yeah, we are getting some people to do the work, but they're also getting, we can get the bodies, but they don't necessarily know how to do the job, if that makes sense. So for example, we had a crew during our pepper harvest who, they gave us the bodies, but they didn't know how to harvest the pepper. So that's issues like that, like, yes, we can get the people, but can they do the job, sort of thing. So that's actually an issue that we are coming up, that is arising here in the desert. But as far as machinery for us, I know my brother is working on his drone application. He just got certified to DPR to do drone spraying. And it's an exciting project for us and the company, just because it's new technology, something new, and hopefully can help lower our cost and make it more in-house, because our corn spraying does have to be done through a third party. So I think technology in ag is a good way to bring in the younger generation into agriculture. You know, so many kids nowadays, they're just technology, technology, technology. So to be able to be like, hey, you can work on a field and work with all these cool machinery and technology, I think it'd be something cool. I mean, what college kid wouldn't want to come out and like use a drone and be spraying corn, right? I think that's a good benefit with technology being introduced to agriculture, is bringing in that new generation to come work into ag. And as far as like crops that are machine harvested, you're right. There are, for example, we do potatoes that obviously cannot be done by farm workers. So it's totally done by machine. Carrots here in the desert as well, all done by machine. We did green beans machine too this season. We tried that out actually. But sometimes, you know, it's like trying to figure it out, like which one will get the most profit out of it. We had troubles with the machine this year, with the green bean machine, but we had to bring in a crew with people, but it's, you know, learning. I've struggled incorporating technology to our company, just because my dad, super old school traditional. I mean, I wish we could do everything digital, but my dad likes to have a paper trail. So I think my younger brother and I coming in and taking over, we definitely see more technology being used in the near future.
And then are there any crops for you guys that the skill is just so particular that it's more beneficial for you to have human laborers?
Oh, yes, 100%. With the corn, since we don't have a pack house, we have people harvesting and they're checking the size with their hand to make sure that the corn is up to size, to make sure that that's something that we can harvest. We had a crew come in that wasn't that skilled in corn, and they were packing, you know, half 6-inch, 3-inch little corns into the boxes. So definitely need to have skilled labor when it comes to like corn or bell peppers as well, because for our bell peppers we do anywhere from 3 to 4 passes, and there's a specific way in pulling the pepper from the plant so you don't damage the plant, and you definitely need to have a crew that knows how to harvest peppers to be able to get the best production.
Okay, myth number three, farmers take home the majority of what consumers are charged in the grocery store.
I wish that was true. No. Our growing costs have gone up significantly since COVID, and our profit margin has gotten smaller after COVID as well. I wish I knew who was making the money, because it's not really us. I don't know. That one's That was a tough one. I mean, the middleman always wins, in my opinion. I feel like that's where all most of the money's going, to be honest.
Yeah. So. Okay. Myth number four. Farmers are irresponsible with their water.
No. Farmers are not irresponsible with water. I mean, we all know we would not be able to farm if it weren't for water. So why are we going to be wasting it? I know there was a lot of water mismanagement there, you know, in the past, but I feel like as a society, we've gotten better at managing our water. So it's really hard for us to really mismanage water. I think being in the desert, too, is very different just because, you know, we have a canal system. It's through Coachella Valley Water District. We don't have our own wells. Like, it always baffles me since I'm not from NorCal. Like, I don't understand their water situation, but I'm like, oh, well, it's not too bad over here. I mean, not yet. I know there's issue with the Colorado River going on and the new deal and everything. But as far as farmers, we use what we need. It's expensive. Why are we going to be overwatering? You know? So
yeah.
The cost of water has just gone up so much lately. And it's like, we're going to only use what we need. We get our water from the water canals. We have our reservoirs and we use what we need. So
yeah. Will you elaborate a bit more on how different types of crops require different styles or techniques of irrigation as opposed to like drip irrigation or flooding?
Flood irrigation. Yeah, I think the only type of flood irrigation that's used here in the desert is for dates, but everything else is drip irrigation. And we do low flow as well on our crops. So bell peppers and sweet corn, it's all low flow. We're not pumping out a bunch of water. My dad's like easy, steady, whatever, just what we need. Something we are trying to work on is installing, finally got my dad to get to install soil moisture meters. And we're going to try it on one ranch and then just go from there. I think we're installing a 70-acre ranch. We're going to install like every 10 acres water, soil, and moisture meter just to be able to keep track and use that technology that's out there to be able to even use less water and be more efficient if we have to be. The less money we can use, the better. So he's like, just water. We have our irrigators that check the fields and everything. Thank God for them. But they're people that value the earth and value nature, and I love them so much because it's like they're out there in the field and they're in heaven.
Okay, myth number five. When I buy organic produce, it's healthier for me than conventional produce would be.
For me, I look at what my dad does, and my dad he brings all those vegetables home. So if he thinks it's safe for his family, I think it's safe for everyone else. So I think when it comes to organic versus conventional, it's really the consumer's choice, but I can see why people choose organic because they think they're getting more a healthier product. But if you look at the organic list of chemicals or whatever that are allowed, I need to like look that up. Like I said, lobbyists keep adding more to that organic. Where is it even organic at this point? Like more things are being allowed, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what does a field have to go through to be considered an organic field?
We did organic for couple years. We had some customers that wanted organic, and we had to do a 40-page application through CCOF. And you know, you have to have all your standard operating procedures. There hasn't been no pesticide been used for like 3 years. It's been a while since we did organic, so I'm not 100% sure on this. Like I said, if my dad's bringing home that produce that is conventional and he thinks it's safe for his family, it's safe. I think there's just a lot of misinformation out there on, you know, I always tell people, if you truly want organic, start your backyard garden.
Myth number six, growers spray too many pesticides on our crops.
No. Pesticides are expensive. The less pesticides you can spray, the better. On top of the fact that it's super heavily regulated, you know, we have our county headquarters inspections where they check all our product use reports. They test the commodity to make sure that, you know, there's a legal limit for each commodity and how much pesticides are used. And we use the bare minimum on pesticides. We have our pest scouts walk in the field, and if they see an issue, we'll handle it right away. But if there's no issues, there's no need to be spraying. Like, pesticides, the cost has tripled for pesticides since COVID started, pretty much, the last 2-3 years.
Could you touch on, you spray a pesticide or an herbicide, realistically, by the time I go to buy that pepper at the grocery store, how much of that pesticide residue is still on the crop versus then I go home and I wash it and I cook it or I do whatever with it? Realistically, that's a hard answer to quantify, I think. But I think the misconception is that I go buy produce and then I eat it and the same amount of pesticide that was on it in the field is on it in my kitchen.
Yeah, no, there's no way, just because that pepper has traveled so far and has been through so much that it barely has any residue by the time it makes it to your table. Because, I mean, think about it. A lot of the spray is falling on the plant, too. It's not just necessarily the pepper. You know, it gets windy out there. A lot of it flies off. Or if it gets dirty, we have to wash the pepper. So a lot of the residue falls off when we clean the pepper and when we pack it. And I don't really think there's much left when it gets to the table. I mean, I think obviously everyone should wash their produce for sure. But like I said, my dad just picks produce from the field, throws it in his truck and brings it home. And my mom washes it and there's dinner.
Okay, myth number 7, herbicides and pesticides are the same thing.
I can see why people get confused with the two. I mean, I feel like people think, oh, you're spraying to kill all these pests, but there's also weeds we have to manage, and that is where herbicides come in. And like I said, pesticides, we spray the least minimal, but herbicides, the weeds become an issue. I mean, we had a field in Bakersfield where the weeds overtook pretty much the whole field at one point because of all the rain we got that year. And we use herbicides to help with the weed control and also help with the cost of weeding, because to have all those people out there weeding a 70-acre field is a lot of money. But like I said, it goes back to like the pesticide use. We use the bare minimum. That's why we have our PCA, pest control advisor, who, you know, has us on our pest gal, and they help us navigate through this whole herbicide pesticide. And that's why they're there too. You know, I think consumers need to know that there are people with that job that give farmers recommendations on what to spray, how much to spray, and the rate, etc.
So what would produce look like for a consumer in the grocery store if farmers didn't utilize any sort of pesticide?
It would be probably have holes from worm damage, bruised, not the right shape, maybe not the right size. And probably not that pretty like you see in the store. And I know as consumers, we're, you know, taught, well, we're, you know, we're like, we want the pretty stuff. And that's what we've been like raised to see, is just pretty stuff. So it's like, if you bring in all this produce, they're gonna be like, where did this come from? So if you want perfect produce, things need to be involved in your produce. I'm sorry.
You could even argue, no, that without some sort of pesticide use, there would be less produce in the market.
Yeah, there would.
Because the fruit and veggies that are coming off of the field wouldn't pass inspections.
Exactly, yeah. For example, our corn, we have to be spraying that almost every day or because of the worm damage. And in Mexico, we missed the spray and we lost 40 acres of corn because of worm damage.
Wow.
So yeah, there are some crops that are very susceptible to, strawberries being one of them too, just a lot of pests. I mean, can you blame the little pests? They just want to eat. But yeah, I have friends that are pest scouts, and they post on their social where they just like tapping the plant. You see all these little thing, you know, bugs come out of it. And he's like, there you go. There's this. This can do this. Spider mite. Just so many type of different pests out there that can mess up your crop.
Yeah. And I don't, especially you mentioned how expensive pesticides are. It wouldn't be feasible for you guys to invest in buying these expensive pesticides if you did not need to use them.
Exactly.
So that thought process of, well, there doesn't need to be anything on my crop or on my produce when I buy it is just not accurate.
No. Like, we're only using herbicides or pesticides when needed. We're not just going out into the field and doing it because it, oh, well, maybe today should be a good day to do that. No, we're doing it because we found an issue and it needs to be resolved before we lose the whole crop.
Yeah. Okay, myth. The majority of farms in the United States are big ag and owned by big corporations, and a very small amount of farms are family owned.
False. As far as I know, all the companies I've been in contact, all of them are family owned. I haven't met any corporation out here in the desert or in California who has taken over farming. Well, in my opinion, when I think of big ag, I think of the Midwest, all the corn and soybean. Massive amount down there. But as far as I wouldn't consider what we see in California, in my opinion, as big ag, because a lot of it's just family farms have been farming for generations, 3-4 generations. And I mean, as a family farm, I mean, we're expanding, so we're only been in the business 15 years. So I'm like, I can see why businesses, family farms have been in business for 100 years are the size they are. Like, why wouldn't you expand as a family farm? That doesn't mean we're big ag. And we've had an issue here in the desert where I wanted to sell at farmers markets, but I was denied because I was considered big ag because we grow a large amount of produce here in the desert, over 100 acres. So they're bringing in people from the mountains. I don't even know where they're bringing from. And the Hemet area that are, you know, quote unquote small farms. But it's like, if it's a farmers market, you know, in the desert, shouldn't we be showcasing our produce? So it really baffles me. But in the end of the day, we're a family farm, and Western growers, family farms. And I've learned so much from the bigger companies in Western growers where I'm like, I'm not saying I'm going to be in business 100 years, but if I can get there one day, that'd be awesome. But to be able to be a small business and be able to learn from other families who have been in the business way longer, to me, that's a blessing. Why wouldn't I want to learn from other family farms? I just feel like there's a big misconception. I think a lot of it comes from social media on what big ag is and what agriculture is. And I hope this podcast can shed some light on the true meaning of farming.
Thanks for listening to this week's Voices of the Valley. Today's episode was produced by Julia Nellis. We'd like to give a huge thanks to Celeste Alonzo for joining us this week and generously sharing her expertise to help us dispel some of the common misconceptions about food and farming. We have a lot more in store for this season of Voices of the Valley, so make sure you tune in each week and join us as we learn more about farming and our food system with some of the most well-respected experts in the industry. If you enjoyed our podcast today, be sure to follow us on X, formerly Twitter, and leave a comment and let us know your thoughts. You can find us at our handle, @WesternGrower. Come join the conversation for a chance to win prizes. That does it for this week's Voices of the Valley. I'm Corey Lundy, signing off. See you next week.